Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, September 16th. And as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We didn't get into the Kavanaugh hearings last week, but we will tonight because there are some, as you know, some allegations of a woman who apparently will come public or has come public with the allegations about something very unfortunate that apparently happened 36 years ago when Mr. Kavanaugh was in high school. Another one of these things that smells a great deal like Anita Hill to me, and we'll talk to Bill in just a second about that. The New York Times and Ambassador Haley had a confrontation this week, and Ambassador Haley won. The New York Times had printed some lies about some curtains that she had purchased. The midterms are just around the corner, and depending who you talk to, the Democrats are either up by 14 Oh, they're up by three. So take your poll. There's so many of them out there. The Mueller probe is interesting and entering a very interesting period now because of the Manafort agreement to cooperate with Mr. Mueller, but also because of these texts that are coming out regarding these FBI agents and what all of that means to the investigation. The politics of hurricanes. Why are we making politics out of hurricanes? I don't know, but apparently we are. So lots to get into with our friend Bill tonight. Let me say hello from Dallas to our good friend up in New York. Bill, the weather's nice here. How about New York?
It's nice today. Apparently not so nice tomorrow, but the political weather is getting stormy. Oh.
Is it ever? Is it ever? You know, we didn't get into Kavanaugh last week. We didn't basically ran out of time. And obviously a week later, he's topic number one. But, you know, apparently something happened 36 years ago, Bill, 1982. It's now a big deal. I guess there's three people that were in the room, as far as I know the story, Bill. Apparently Mr. Kavanaugh, the lady, and another person to deny it. The lady says it happened. What do you do, Bill?
Well, first of all, it's... You read these stories and you want to just go take a bath. It's
right.
So sleazy. It's so sleazy. This kind of thing at one point never happened in Supreme Court cases. The Democrats will do anything. This is Clarence Thomas all over again at the last minute. The last minute. The man had a long career in government, was very highly regarded. At the last moment before a vote, a woman comes forward in Anita Hill's case with very vague charges. And all the Democrats became very grave about it. And, of course, he was an African-American, but he was a conservative African-American, which means he was it was open season on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember, he did not have the support of the black establishment. He was not a party liner. And they would be happy to have gotten rid of him and to teach a lesson. So the vote is scheduled in the Judiciary Committee for this Thursday. I don't think it will take place. I think that one of the members, Jeff Flake of Arizona, who's supposedly a Republican and who's leaving the Senate in bitterness over what he thinks his party has become, has said, I want to hear more. Senator Graham has pointed out that, well, he'd be willing to listen, but only if it does not interrupt the time table of the committee. But without Jeff Flake's vote, I don't think it'll go to the floor. I think that this is his revenge against Donald Trump. If he does something like this, I think that there are going to be some phone calls in the next few days. The Democrats are demanding that the vote be put off. The fact of the matter is, if the vote is put off and there's an investigation, the entire issue will be settled in November by the election. If the Democrats take control of the Senate, there is no point in Kavanaugh even continuing his nomination. He will never be confirmed. And that will end it. And that's, of course, exactly what the objective is. But, you know, you hear a story like this. Is it possible that it happened? Yes, it's even possible that it happened exactly the way she said it did. It is possible. But we depend on evidence in this country. Now she's waving the flag. Suddenly this woman who wanted anonymity, she's saying, well, I have to come forward because my civic responsibility is involved. This man has gone through, Judge Kavanaugh, 6 FBI background checks, and I went through an FBI background check when I worked for the CIA. It is extensive. It goes back to your birth.
Right.
And people are interviewed, people are questioned. I got calls from old friends. What have you applied for? I got interviewed by the FBI. If anything was unusual about this man, it would have come out long before now, and nothing has ever come out. The individual tells a story of being sexually attacked on the second floor of a house or a building or something at a party. She can't remember when the party took place, which is very convenient because that means they can't put out a call for witnesses.
Right.
I mean, you know, did you attend a party at such and such a place? Well, I can't remember exactly what the date was. A little unusual for somebody who thinks it was that traumatizing. And, of course, immediately out come the so-called experts in this field. Oh, this isn't unusual at all. It often comes out years later. But it certainly comes out at convenient times. That's for
right.
sure.
That's right.
Now,
yes.
we don't know anything about her political views. She is a distinguished scholar. I mean, she has all the credentials. However, she works at a university, Palo Alto University, which is basically a specialized university that specializes in psychiatry. And their mission
mm-hmm.
statement is multicultural and all that other stuff. And you wonder, you know, it almost reads, when you read the mission statement of Palo Alto University, more like a religious statement about how big devoted they are to this. So I don't know what her views are on. She says that she didn't understand the full details of what happened until a psychiatrist in about
right.
2012 or something taught her what it really meant. So are we going to hear if she testifies her memory, or are we going to hear the psychiatrist's memory? They say also that she took a lie detector test in August and passed it. She may very well have. It may have been
mm-hmm.
a valid test. But we don't know that yet. The announcement was made, or the statement was made, it was by a former FBI agent. That tells me nothing. Is this someone
mm-hmm.
who was trained in polygraphy by the FBI, or somebody who was an agent, retired, and went into lie detection? It could be one of those, you know, individuals who is well known for how he shades or interprets data. We don't know anything yet. She has presented no witness evidence from the night of the alleged assault. She has said that her memory is that Kavanaugh's friend, a man by whose last name is Judge, I don't recall his first name, Mark Judges, I don't recall
Matt,
his first name,
I think, yeah.
Matt Judge,
yeah.
Yes, who's a commentator, a political commentator, conservative, was in the room and he did the same thing. The judge says nothing like this ever happened. It was a party. There were other people in the building at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The claim is that Kavanaugh was dead drunk. Well, if he was dead drunk, other people would have seen that.
Oh,
not
absolutely.
Just her, but nobody else is coming forward. And again, when you can't give us the date, you can't give us this, I don't know if she actually knew Kavanaugh. She now says, well, I mentioned this to my husband years ago when he became well-known in Washington, that I hope he didn't get nominated to the Supreme Court. Well, he did get nominated, but before that he was nominated and confirmed
mm-hmm.
as an appeal court judge for the D.C. Circuit, the most important appeal court in the country, not exactly chopped liver. And she never came forward then.
Right.
And you know, it could have happened exactly the way she described. But no evidence has been put forward, and the timing is the Anita Hill timing. And I think many people find it revolting.
Well, the other thing too, now, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but I understand her husband said that even though it happened in high school, you know, we expect our Supreme Court justices to be, you know, people of character and all of that,
yeah.
which sounds to me like a political statement more than
that,
anything
else. And that's
else.
The point. I'd love to know
yeah.
more about him. I'd love to know more about her and her political background. If there is any, there may not be any.
Right.
Again, we're trying to be fair, but the reality is that this has all the earmarks of a political hit. And it could be also that something did happen, but it was not as she described.
Well, and here's the thing. She also said, and again, I'm paraphrasing from things that I've seen, some of the news that I've seen, that apparently that there were other, that this was a school, I guess, of, you know, very of young men who've gone on to very successful careers.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if she's willing to name the names of the others.
Yes.
As well, because there was apparently more than two at this party. But then she also said in some of the things that I've been reading that she didn't want to tell her parents because she didn't want her parents to know that she was out, I guess, at a party where people were drinking. So,
yes.
You know, it has all of the makings here that I think if she were to get on a chair under oath, I think she would have a hard time, in my opinion, being cross-examined because people would challenge and she would have to say, well, I didn't know this. I didn't know. I don't know that. I don't know that. So, you know, maybe the best thing would be to put her on the chair and say, well, let's answer this question. You know, what really happened? Well, tell us what happened. Because it sounds to me like it's a very convenient story, but it has a lot of holes in it, Barry, Bill, like you just said.
Yes. Well, that is something that deeply troubles me. I mean, this is a man who with an impeccable reputation,
yes.
And Clarence Thomas had an impeccable reputation. And we're being told a story for the first time 4 days before a confirmation vote. Kavanaugh has been a public figure in Washington for many years. He was in the Bush White House. He's been on the appeals court,
mm-hmm.
very well known in Washington circles. His family was apparently well known when he was a teenager, went to a prep school in Washington. Nothing like this has ever come out, and I think the point has been made that common sense tells us that boys and men who do this kind of thing don't do it once. You know, they do it again and again to see what they can get away with and because they find it fun. But there would have been, during this period, something would have been said. And look, it's possible in the next 2 days, three other women will come forward. Then they would have to be vetted. This woman, just her background, does make me a little suspicious that she works in this university that's devoted to this kind of thing, that she waited all these years. And she also said that she went to a group therapy session in 2012 and for the first time mm-hmm. spoke publicly about it. You know, how many years back are you going to go? This reminds me of McCarthyism. That's what McCarthyism really was. They would go back into
mm-hmm.
people's lives 20, 30, 40 years, found they went to a meeting one night, and at that meeting was somebody who worked for Joe Stalin, and, you know, you have been associating with enemies of the United States, and people's reputations would be ruined and smeared. And this reminds me of it. And the fact that you see this pattern also in the Me Too
mm-hmm.
things, some of which I'm sure are absolutely true, but others you do wonder. For example, you see these stories where six women come forward on the same day about events that occurred 20 years ago. Well, obviously they didn't all come forward by coincidence. These are organized efforts, and you can be sure that if the press would do its job, which it does not do and doesn't want to do. My first question is, who did the organizing? And I do not know, but I would be willing to make an educated guess that it is a law firm with a lot to gain.
Right. Well, here's in the interesting part. And again, I'm just going to quickly paraphrase what was in a news story. It says that she says that it occurred during a summer day in the 1980s at a Maryland house where teens had gathered. Ford claimed she headed upstairs to a bathroom where she was suddenly pushed onto a bed as rock and roll was blasting, I guess. Then she told the Post that she did not recall exactly who owned the house, how she came to be at the house, or how the gathering was arranged. So, I mean, I would think that if she, you know, if people begin to ask her a question, the first question I would ask her, were you drunk also? Because it sure sounds to me, I mean, it sure sounds to me like, you know, she may have been drunk herself. And so I wonder how credible that would be.
That may very well be the case. And also another thing is, this was a party in Maryland. She doesn't know how she came to. It sounds like a Jackie Mason
right.
routine.
Yes.
She doesn't know. No, no, I didn't. I don't know how I got there. I mean, I suddenly
right.
I was at this party. Well, I have one question.
Right.
Who invited you?
Right.
Somebody must have invited her. Somebody must have told her about it. She didn't suddenly. It is a Jackie Mason routine. I was on this block. Suddenly there was a party. I wound up on
right.
upstairs. I don't know how this happened. I never heard of any of these people.
Right.
I mean, it's,
well, it does like
know,
the remember the movie Animal House? That's
oh,
what
yes,
it sounds
yeah.
like to
yes,
me.
Yes,
you know, it, when I read this thing, I was thinking of the movie Animal House because that's what happened. A bunch of, well, those were college kids, but they got drunk and everybody was doing stuff that I'm sure they regretted the next morning. But this is the thing. The ending of the story is very exciting, but the details of how, you know, she ended up, I guess, on a bed are somewhat sketchy. And I would ask her point blank, were you drinking too, Miss Ford? I mean, were you drinking? Were you drunk? Do you know anybody else? I mean, you know, a party in the early 1980s, that's 3 or 4 summers that this thing could have happened, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely true. And you know, again, look, I'm sure right now as we speak, they're all on the phone talking about this. And
yes.
I think the main figures here will be Jeff Flake, Lisa Murkowski, and Senator Collins of Maine. Senator Collins is already under threat in Maine, literally physical threat
yes.
if she votes for Kavanaugh. Susan Collins is an honorable woman. She really is. I think is a flake. I think his name is exactly
yes,
right.
Yes.
But I think they can hold this thing up, and they can. Now, if they hold it up, I think then Kavanaugh should demand a full investigation of the case, with the
right.
understanding that if this woman is lying, she could go to prison. You know, she would have to be put under oath if she wants
right.
to testify. I think that the committee should probably hear her in executive session, but sworn, and that would make her a perjurer if she was lying. So I think, well, look, we may be in for Clarence Thomas hearings. I remember them; they were a
right.
farce.
Oh,
The whole thing was a joke. And her advisor was a black law professor from Harvard, obviously out to get Clarence Thomas for going off the reservation, for not being a party liner. And Justice Thomas, we should point out, has served now for 25 years, but certainly a quarter
91,
of a century.
Yeah. 1991.
Court. Yes. And there has not been a single charge against him. There has
right.
not been a single charge against Judge Kavanaugh. And I think that it could blow up. I mean, it could blow up. You know, Eisenhower once said, if you have an intractable problem, enlarge the problem. It would be very interesting if the committee turned the tables on these people who are trying to delay everything and asked for a whole series of investigations of this and other things in government, and it could rattle their cages a little bit.
Well, be careful what you wish for is what I would say to the Democrats, because
yes.
What's going to happen to Keith Ellison up in Minnesota? I mean, the charges
oh,
against
yes.
him are more recent,
and they
didn't happen
credible.
When he was in high school. So this is my guess, and again, I honestly didn't think that we would be talking about Kavanaugh regarding this because I thought he had such a great week, and the Democrats had such a bad week the week before. But
yeah.
I my gut feeling is that this story is going to blow up because I don't think this lady wants to go under oath with the story that we know so far, that a summer night in the early 1980s, I don't know how I got there, but I got there. I didn't know what house it was, but I was at a house, and I went up to the bathroom in the second floor, and then, you know, the whole thing is it would be very easy, I think, for a person like a Senator Graham to just ask her some questions point blank, and then if she was drunk, how can the story be credible, Bill?
It's not credible. That destroys the story immediately. Nobody will take her seriously. It may be unfair. You know, it's the old story.
Yes.
If she was drunk, but she may not admit it. She may,
right.
or she may have a lawyer who says, "What does that have to do with it?" You know, but if you go to a party where liquor is served and these were underage kids,
that's the other thing.
You didn't go to drink a Diet Coke, you know.
No.
I mean, you really didn't, and she doesn't. Again, I keep on having Jackie Mason in my mind, imagining him as a witness in this.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, there was some stuff in glasses. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was medicine. It looked like the thing my mother gave me when I had a cough. What was the harm? You know?
I know. It's. I mean, hopefully, the whole thing will blow up of its own doing, because
yes.
the story has so many holes in it that I don't know now if other women come out. But the interesting thing about Judge Kavanaugh is that a bunch of other women have indeed come out to defend his character.
In his favor, very much so.
Yes.
I have confidence in Grassley. Grassley is a very solid senator, and I think he may delay the vote by, 6 or 7 days and say, you've got to testify in executive session, not a political circus, but you have to testify under oath. And she might refuse. She might refuse.
If I had her story, I might refuse too, Bill. Because
yep.
her story, at least what's come out, again, we have not heard anything more than what has come out. But, this idea that in a summer night in the early 1980s, I was at a house, I didn't know what house. I mean, it sounds to me like maybe she was a pretty crazy girl herself. I don't know.
That's possible.
Yeah, so, what can I say? But let me ask you a larger question, because, this is what Roe v. Wade has done to us, I think.
Yeah, I'm afraid,
and it's not
I
so
agree.
Much.
I agree, yes.
Not so much abortion itself, abortion itself, but Roe v. Wade. This defense of Roe v. Wade at any cost has basically
yes.
done this to the Senate. This would not be happening were it not for Roe v. Wade. This craziness would not be happening.
I happen to agree with you. You know, it reminds me of another discussion in our country's history about Brown versus Topeka Board, which was the famous
mm-hmm.
desegregation decision. And when I was at the Graduate School of Journalism, we had a lecture by Herbert Wechsler, a very distinguished constitutional law professor at Columbia. And he said he applauded the outcome of the decision, but he didn't like the way it was written. He said,
mm-hmm.
I would have much preferred that it be based entirely on the Constitution and not on sociological evidence. And I knew what he meant. Sociological evidence can be interpreted many different ways. But the Constitution, once the Supreme Court says this is it, at least if it comes up again, that's it. And I can understand what he meant. That's what judges do. They interpret the law. And ever since Roe, there seems to be and this twisted logic that was used in Roe, that this was somehow a right of privacy and that it's in the Constitution. It's not in the Constitution. I think we've had this idea that everybody's narrative has to be listened to. Everybody
mm-hmm.
is entitled to a narrative. Who are we to question somebody else's view of the truth? I also think that this is a reflection of the fact that we live in a time of very low standards. They,
mm-hmm.
they really are. I mean, you're seeing today things going on around this case that have nothing to do with it, but yet reflect an attitude in society that truth doesn't count because it's only a cultural construct, that merit doesn't count. There was a professor this week, I believe, from Harvard who said that meritocracy simply extends white privilege. Well, a test I've always used, and it's a test that's been used by others, is go back to the writing of the Declaration of Independence and trace the history of all those prominent families of men who signed. Not one of them is prominent today. In this country,
mm-hmm.
there is opportunity. You have people prominent in American life today who no one ever heard of 30 years ago. The fact
mm-hmm.
of the matter is that meritocracy does not preserve white privilege. It preserves merit. It
mm-hmm.
really does. And,
that's right.
And that doesn't mean you can't disagree, but the reality is everyone can participate as long as they do the job and work toward excellence. That doesn't mean there'll
right.
always be fairness. There's unfairness in society. You
mm-hmm.
saw in the last few weeks a very, very disturbing case involving again, Harvard University, which
mm-hmm.
Is accused by Asian students of rigging admission systems to discriminate against Asian students because there were so many excellent Asian students who applied. I mean, imagine being part of a family of Asian immigrants who came
mm-hmm.
here legally, played by the rules. Your kids work their heads off. They may work in the family business. I know there was a case in Virginia
mm-hmm.
where there was a little Vietnamese restaurant we went to, and there was one of the kids pitched in at night as waiters, but they went to a table in the corner. You could see their textbooks. You could see one's violin. They work their heads off, and
mm-hmm.
then they're told when they apply to college, you can't be admitted because you're the wrong race.
Right. Oh,
that's right.
No, that's horrible. It's un-American.
Horrible.
I mean,
it is un-American.
It's un-American. You sit
that's
there and you go, my goodness.
That's what we were fighting against.
That's right, and this is the American dream. I mean, these Asian Americans are, you know, the best example of the American dream that there is. But I tell you, it's just this whole thing is troubling, and it really is all about Roe v. Wade, not so much about abortion, but defending Roe v. Wade, and it just makes you sick. I mean, just totally, completely sick. Bill, let me take a little break. When we get back, we've got a lot more to get into with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, a couple of quick stories, not so hard as the first one about Kavanaugh. Lauren Bacall, the famous actress, was born on this day, 1924. I came to like her movies recently a lot, but apparently that you had some contact with her, as I understand.
She was our neighbor. Not in the next apartment in Manhattan, but in the next building. She lives in the Dakota, very famous building, the place where John Lennon lived and Leonard Bernstein, and we lived in the building next door. And we saw her all the time. She would sashay down 72nd Street in New York, about 5'10", always elegant, always with a kind of, even in very warm weather, she always wore a kind of half coat. I once waited in line with her at the Chase Bank on the corner. She waited in line like everybody else, and she was elegant. She was very elegant. She walked beautifully. She moved beautifully, and she was a reasonably competent actress. Unfortunately, she did have another side that became very famous. Her name was Betty Bacall. That was actually her birth name, and everyone called her Betty.
Right,
but she was notoriously difficult to deal with. And a bully, and that really did affect her career. The people in the New York show community, for example, knew all about this, and she was a legend. They talked about the number of assistants she had, and they all quit. They talked about the fact that the people who appeared with her in a Broadway show in the late 60s that she did couldn't stand being around her, and yet her screen image was absolutely sterling. She was a star. There's no question about it. She was a star in the great tradition of movie stars. It's sad that that she could not control her lesser instincts. There was a story written by a newspaper man who made an appointment to interview her at her apartment, and he came 5 minutes late. And she really gave it to him for being fine. I mean, she was retired at this point. Well, you're coming late and everything like that. Well, I don't know if I want to do this interview. And he knew how to handle the situation. He just closed his notebook and said, well, Ms. Bacall, I guess we're not going to do this. And he stopped walking out. Then she ran after him. She said, oh, I didn't mean it. You know, she was a bully. And you confront a bully, they back down. And it's sad because she was extremely intelligent. I mean, she was politically active, not on our side, but she was politically active. I think the causes she engaged in were at least reasonable. And it's sad that that star quality and that intelligence was short-circuited by a personality that only a mother could possibly love on occasion.
Interesting about Lauren Bacall, because I didn't know much about her life. I mean, I knew the name, of course, but I didn't know a lot about her. And a few years ago, I watched this unbelievably interesting movie called The Dark Passage, where she and Humphrey Bogart are in the movie. And the movie is from 1947. And I didn't realize she was only 23 when she made that movie.
Yes.
I didn't realize she was that young when she made those movies with Key Largo, I guess, the other movie, I believe, that she made with Bogart. So I guess there was a 20-year difference between them, which at least to me, it didn't. That was not apparent on the screen. I mean, he didn't look that much older than I mean, it didn't seem to me they were 20 years apart. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, Bill.
That's right. She was so elegant and presented yes. herself as an adult. And I remember her appearing in the 1950s on Ed Murrow's program, Person to Person. You may remember or know of the program. He would interview people in their homes. I mean, he was at a studio somewhere else, and by live television, he would interview in their homes. And I remember how elegantly she behaved. When she wanted to, she behaved very, very well. And she was married to a man who was a rather tough guy, and he adored her. I mean, and she handled his death at a sad age. I mean, she wasn't very old when he died, maybe in her 30s, with great dignity. I mean, she knew how to turn on class when she wanted to. She then went on to marry Jason Robards, who also lived next door to us. We saw him all the time also. But he became an alcoholic, and she divorced him. She had flings, apparently, with, you know, Sinatra and some of the other people. And in her old age, she lived there and died. She was related to one of the Israeli prime ministers, Shimon Peres.
Yes, I read that.
Who became president of Israel. In fact, a rather close relative. But she did so many things well and a few things not so well.
Right.
And I think her career became limited. She did do some television. I think she would have been a wonderful host of a talk show because she was so elegant and so intelligent. But it didn't happen, and she's gone now. She has a son who is a Robards, and I do think she did have either one or two children with Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, I don't
and
know,
she,
but she died.
And she took... She died about a year ago, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the other thing. I didn't realize that she had died, I guess, in 2014, so recently. But anyway, that movie, Dark Passage, is a great movie. I really enjoyed it a great deal. They had it on TV several times on that TCM channel.
She was famous for one line was it Key Largo, where she said, if you want me, just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you? You just put your lips together and blow. And it was the way she said it. I mean, it was X-rated. But that is the line that made her famous.
Yes, but she was, as you say, very elegant, elegant actress. Well, you had elections in New York this week, Bill. Governor Cuomo won easily, as projected. But the young socialist certainly knows how to dress. I'll put that. I'll give her that. She knows how to shop. And she knows how to dress.
Well, this is the story now. She has now come back with a response to this. We're talking about Evita from the Bronx by way of Westchester. Yeah. She was in a photo shoot with, and I think wearing about $4,000 worth of clothing. She has explained it today. She said, the people who criticize me don't know what the term photo shoot means. Well, the question is, girlie, why do you know what it means? You're so involved with the people, the average people.
Right.
And she said, you don't get to keep those clothes. That's true. I mean, they bring a lot of costumes, and it was a little unfair. But you would think that she would be a little more careful about appearing as a, you know, to be a wealthy woman in an ad. I mean, it shows that her political naivete. And she said, there was nothing wrong with this. I gave the clothes back and all the rest. She's constantly the butt of jokes, which is a little unfair also, because she seems to be sincere. This is not a story about politics, the story of little Evita.
Mm-hmm.
This is a story about sex. I call it a Gloria Steinem story. When Gloria Steinem broke through in the 1960s, it had nothing to do with her brain. Believe me, she wrote a story called A Bunny's Tale, in which she went undercover as a Playboy bunny. And with the story came a picture of her in her outfit, and that's what did it. Now, I know that's not politically correct to say it, but that's the truth, because I was in journalism at the time, and she became a favorite of press photographers because of the picture, not because of anything that was in the story. Nobody remembers the story. It was the photo, and the photo made her famous, and it's happened many times before. Now, for little Evita, she is a very attractive woman. She really is, and she does handle herself well, not in terms of discussing policy, but she, you know, she hasn't done anything obscene. She doesn't use vulgarity. She is beautiful. She really is, and more power to her. And I think that is really what the story is about. She's an attractive woman going into politics. If she looked like Woody Allen and was discussing socialism, the story would have lasted one day. As it
that's
is,
right.
As it is, the turnout in her primary was 13%. She was
right.
nominated by her party with 8% of that party's registered voters in her area. It's not that big a political deal. It's she, as a personality, who's a deal.
That's right. And, of course, Governor Cuomo was renominated, or whatever, I think that's the word, renominated by, he apparently won easily, but how was the turnout, Bill, in New York for that election? Was it low?
It was higher than expected,
really?
But I don't remember the figures. And Cynthia Nixon and her people say if it had been lower, they would have done better. And that's true, because a low turnout, when you have a very
mm-hmm.
energized group behind you, is actually better for you. But it brought out a lot of the traditional Democratic voters who did not want to see the party go far left. And Cuomo was seen as a moderate Democrat. There have been some statements this week by other analysts of politics who point out that most of the Democrats who won their primaries this year were not on the far left. They were moderates. And
mm-hmm.
The fact is that Cuomo is not a particularly popular guy. I mean, he's not the most
no.
likable person in the world. He's not like his father, who was very elegant and
mm-hmm.
Very smooth and very much the patrician. Andy Cuomo is tougher. He somewhat boisterous. He can come out with and make ridiculous statements if he's not under control, like America was never that great. He was trying to appeal to the far left of his party. Then he issued a statement saying, well, it came out wrong. At least he had the sense to issue the statement. He has presidential ambitions, which I'm sure will never be realized, because he is certainly not the kind who's going to be nominated by the National Party. You know,
right,
if they want an aging white guy, they'll go with Joe Biden.
Absolutely. No, you're exactly right about that. He makes a lot more sense. Actually, he would be a much tougher candidate. I think Biden would be a tougher candidate than Cuomo. Now, something else, too, in New York this week, Bill, the New York Times ran a story which at first didn't make a lot of sense to me when I first read it, but they had to correct it. The story, of course, had to do with Ambassador Haley having purchased some curtains or something. Then we figured out, or they had to correct themselves, saying, well, the order had actually been made before during the Obama administration. How does this happen? You worked in a newspaper. How does something this flagrant happens? You know, there are mistakes and there are mistakes, but it sure looks to me in this order, in this particular story, Bill, that nobody did their homework and checked the receipts. I mean, am I naive in saying that?
Not naive at all.
Yeah.
This was a story of an overeager reporter and an
mm-hmm.
all too willing to accept it editor, who did not check the background of the sales. The story was about the purchase of curtains and a motorized curtain system for the residence of the U.N. ambassador, our U.N. ambassador. They had bought an apartment, the U.S. government did, I believe, in the Waldorf Astoria. I think it was the Waldorf. And
mm-hmm.
Under the Obama administration, renovated it, which is not the business of the ambassador. The ambassador has nothing to do with it. And one of the things they installed, or ordered to be installed, was this very expensive curtain system.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki Haley had nothing to do with it. It was all done before
mm-hmm.
she even arrived. And they ran the story, and it was run in a kind of with a cynical headline about her tastes, her expensive tastes. Nobody bothered to check the basics. Now, as soon as the basic facts came out, the Times, to its credit, issued a retraction. But you know, it's the old story. Who was it who said that? I think Mark Twain, that a lie is halfway around the world before the truth catches
mm-hmm.
up with it. I don't think the story did much damage. It did more damage to the Times. But when I was at the Graduate School of Journalism, the first lesson we were taught was about things like that. And the example they always used was the famous Dag Hammarskjöld story. Dag Hammarskjöld was the Secretary General of the UN in the early 1960s. He was on a trip to Africa and was going to a particular location to meet with some local political leaders. The Associated Press ran the story. Dag Hammarskjöld arrived in whatever town it was or city and is en route to meet with President this and President that. The only problem with the story was Dag Hammarskjöld was dead. He had been killed in a plane crash. The plane never reached its destination. The reporter did not go to the airport, did not confirm arrival, simply ran the story, a fake story, basically. Probably too lazy to do the actual work, and it became an object lesson in journalism. Another object lesson is there have been times, and they have been documented, where theater critics wrote a review of a play they'd never seen. There was a case, and I don't recall the details of it, but a theater critic wrote a review of a play, reviewed the work of a particular actress in the play, and the review ran, and when people who were familiar with that play and were in the theater noticed the fact that that actress was sick that night, and was there was an understudy who went on, and the actress he reviewed wasn't even in the theater. And, of course, I think the reviewer in a case like that probably was fired. But these things do happen. They really do.
Well,
and it's laziness. It's the willingness to push the bias and push it some more. You know, happens.
Yeah, no, that's what it is, because I was always under the impression that in a newspaper, of course, you have the reporter, you have the editor, but there's always, like, the proofreader, if I could put it that way, the person who checks the grammar, makes sure that everything is spelled correctly, or maybe double checks on the facts, you know. And it just seems to me here that there was an absence of any of that. That they had a story, they wanted to run with it, and it made the newspaper look bad at the end of the day. It's the Times that had to apologize. Now they may have helped. They may have turned Nick Haley into a stronger political figure by doing this. That may be true also, Bill.
That very well. You know, if you're the victim of a bad news report, sometimes you come out as a hero. I'm concerned about Nikki Haley. She's a terrific public servant. She really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid she's going to get lost in this administration, in the backwash, and that her political career, which should put her right at the top, she'd make a wonderful president. She really would. She has such a wonderful combination of qualities, and also she's a minority, a legitimate minority, not like Elizabeth Warren, who rode with the Lone Ranger or something. I don't know. But I think she's going to get lost in the administration, because I think the president is in for some very tough times, and I'd hate to lose her service to the country, because she's almost irreplaceable.
Yeah, she's very good. She's very good in a very important job, and as far as I can tell, she's doing it quite well. Well, talking about politics, the midterms are coming up. They'll be here in about less than 2 months, 6 weeks, I think it is, or 7 weeks, or whatever it may be. When you look at this so-called generic vote that everybody focuses on, depending on which one you look at, it's either plus 14 for the Democrats or plus 3 for the Democrats. That's a big difference between plus 14 and plus 3. I have noticed one thing, and I looked at the numbers earlier. I looked at the number yesterday. The RCP average has 6 polls, the last 6. The ones with likely voters have it closer,
yes.
Plus 2, plus 3, plus 4. The ones with registered voters or adults have these big gaps. Now, again, I don't know what poll will be right. We'll find out on election day. But when you see gaps like this, you really begin to wonder if anybody has any idea. And then you look at the Senate, really the only Democrat who seems to be holding on and in pretty good position is Manchin in West Virginia. All the others are within the margin of error or losing, again, depending on the average. Again, to be fair, many of them are very close elections, so it's not like, you know, anybody's running away with it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, how do you follow any of this? I've come to the conclusion maybe the best thing to do is to see what happens on Election Day, Bill.
That's the only poll that counts. Look, these
yes.
elections, especially in midterms, are dependent on two things. One is local popularity. These are local elections. I mean, they are midterms. No, there is no president on the ballot or presidential candidate. So it's the individual races that count. And second, the other thing that counts more than in presidential years is turnout. If you can get your people to turn out, you can flip an election. And the sad fact is that the Democrats are showing more enthusiasm this year, but there may not be enough of them. Now, the race that really interests me and worries me more than anyone else is the one in your state of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
If this little nothing guy, Bobby O'Rourke, or whatever his name is, I don't know, again, the Robert,
Robert O'Rourke.
The Jackie Mason routine. I never heard of him. He got a phony name. Who gave him a name like that? He's Irish. His name is Beto. They don't have that in Ireland. You know, I mean, he is a fraud. He is an absolute fraud. And he is so far left. I mean, he doesn't have a good word for his own country. Ted Cruz is a credit to the Senate as one of the Senate's great intellects. He may not be the most personable guy. Nobody claims he's Mr. Popularity. But I think that if we lost Cruz, it would be a tragedy.
If we lose,
For two reasons. Beto O'Rourke will in 1 minute become a national figure, and he doesn't deserve to be. He doesn't deserve
to be. And you said you were going to say a second reason. Maybe I misunderstood you, but were you going to say a second point, or I didn't mean to interrupt you? But no, but they have their first of three. They finally have a debate. It'll come. It'll be on Friday. It'll be here in Dallas, and there's one in Houston, and then in San Antonio. I fully expect Ted Cruz will win, and the big reason is that this is still a pretty conservative state, and one of the advantages of Beto O'Rourke so far is he really has not had to define himself. He talks in generalities. Like the other day, for example, he said, "Well, you know, we want to do big things." Well, sounds great. But what are these big things?
Well,
so I think Cruz could actually tear him up in the debates. But you're right about Cruz. He does not have he's not O'Rourke when it comes to charming a crowd. That much O'Rourke is better at that than Cruz. But I think the bottom line for me in Texas, and what I tell my friends outside of Texas who are worried about this race as you are, and you're correct in being worried about it, is that I think Cruz is going to win because of Governor Abbott, who's going to be leading the ticket. When you vote on Election Day here, Governor Abbott is leading. And depending on what poll you look at, and there's so many polls, but depending on which one you look at, he's anywhere from 13% to 23% ahead. Now, I don't see, again, I may be dead crazy here, Bill, but I don't see anybody going, you know, Abbott, our Lieutenant Governor Patrick, who's super conservative, the Agricultural Commissioner Bush, who would be the third name on the list. This is the president's nephew, the president's grandson, depending on which one we're talking about. But he's becoming a very popular figure. So he would be number three on that list. So I just don't see anybody going Abbott, Patrick, Bush, let me vote for O'Rourke. It just doesn't make sense to me, Bill. So I think I just think that this is where where Cruz is going to benefit from. He's on the right side of the ballot. I'll put it that way, Bill.
Yes, well, that's true. I just wish for him. Now, of course, we're going to have a very interesting bit of showbiz in that race, in that President Trump is going to come into campaign for Ted Cruz, who he called Lying Ted. Now, I hope that the speechwriters are already at work, knowing that O'Rourke is going to use this and use their past. And I think they're going to have to come in and say, look, I've said some things about Ted. He said some things about me. It's politics, but this guy is one of the best senators. Trump has got to go all out. He's got to just absolutely say, I've come to know this man. He is a terrific senator. And then he's got to go after Beto. I mean, if they can.
Yes, and he will.
But you'll notice something about Beto O'Rourke. You know the fact that he is, that they keep on saying he's Kennedy-esque. This is not an accident. His name is Robert Francis O'Rourke. Bobby Kennedy's name was Robert Francis Kennedy. This is not a coincidence, and his speech pattern is very similar. Just like as the thing that you just said, we've got to do big things. That's the way that Robert Kennedy spoke. We've got to do things in China. We should do things in the Middle East. You never knew exactly what it was, and And he comes off as this kind of second-rate pseudo-intellect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he quotes Shakespeare the way Robert Kennedy did, who I think thought Shakespeare was a restaurant, but they put the lines in for him to quote. But he has this he was trying to explain to one interviewer his position on Israel, which is anti-Israel. I mean, he says, well, I'm not against the Iron Dome, but I don't think we should simply spend that kind of money without it being looked at pretty carefully. And he was one of seven senators, seven members of the House, rather, 7 to vote against the funding the Iron Dome, which is a joint American-Israeli defense project, which has given us enormous information on missile development. And I said, well, you know, sometimes I think that by being nice to Israel, we've actually hurt them. No logic, just, you know, just that stuff. But he has that pattern, having remembered Robert Kennedy very well. This is not unintended. This is, I think.
Right. Well, there's a professor here at. Yeah,
yes.
There's a professor here at UTA, the University of Texas Arlington, who is quite a well-known political scientist around here, who often speaks on the radio about politics, and he thinks that as time passes, that Cruz will pull ahead as more and more people begin to. I hope so too, because the last thing we need is Beto O'Rourke in the U.S. Senate. Bill, time is flying, but I do want to get to the story of Mr. Mueller and the probe, and especially these two agents who apparently were texting each other. I never understood why two people would do so much texting to each other. It just seems to me that they were either very confident that nobody would ever read the text, or pretty stupid, Bill. I don't know. I mean, they're talking now about a strategy for leaks. Before they were talking about insurance policy, these people must have been pretty confident that nobody would ever read these texts, Bill.
Yes, they're very, very sloppy, very, very sloppy. You know, there is an old line in politics that always applies. It's something I repeat over and over to young people, and it goes like this. Never put into a message anything you don't want to see on the front page of the Washington Post the next morning, because it might be there. It's amazing these people put this stuff in writing. And didn't they understand things can be hacked and intercepted or kept as records? I think it is perfectly evident that they behave very improperly as executives of the FBI and that they should be held to account. But what we are facing in this country today is really a press crisis. I don't use the word crisis loosely. It's a word that is very overused. But we are in a situation, having come from journalism, where journalism is not doing the constitutional job for which it was intended.
Mm-hmm.
It was intended as a check on the government, you know, the fourth estate, the watchdog of the people. All it is a watchdog for one side. I mean, people like the ones who run CNN have cheapened that network to the point where it's an embarrassment. And yet, if Trump is forced from office, they will get up and say, this is our proudest moment. I mean, you have people at CNN who know better. They really do. Wolf Blitzer knows better. He's an old newsman. Some of the others know better. But you have these crazy left-wing nutcases. I was reminded by you just last week that it was an anniversary of the first half-hour news broadcast, which I think was in the late 50s, early 60s. In those days, news directors, vice presidents for news with television networks fought for every minute. Now, when they have every minute, CNN has 24 hours a day. You can't give anybody more than 24 hours a day. The time doesn't exist. And look what they do with it. They've squandered it all. Just squandered it all.
Well, this story about the FBI agents, you would think that a curious press would really be curious about it. Because this is the idea that FBI agents are talking to each other about this. It has really nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the FBI. And my gut feeling, I have over the years, I've met men who work at the FBI, and I've attended places where they've spoken and all of that. And I have always had tremendous respect for the FBI. To me, the FBI is a really amazing institution. I'm not saying it's perfect, and I'm sure there were times when it was better than others. But overall, I think the public has a lot of respect for the FBI. And my guess is that a lot of strong FBI agents or good FBI agents cannot be happy by these texts, cannot be happy by people in their business doing this, Bill.
I know that we've seen some former FBI agents and former FBI officials, including the former director of the New York office, who appeared on television saying just that. That they're not pleased with what's happened to the FBI. It has become very politicized. Now, under Hoover, there were problems. There were things he did that were bad boy things he shouldn't have done, but he also built a great investigatory agency. And his legacy is a split legacy, but there's plenty of good there. But they did try to reform some of the bad things he did. I think the agency was running pretty smoothly for years, but now you get the feeling that under Obama, it was highly politicized.
Oh, absolutely, because it's all politicized in one direction.
That's
you know, and that's what gives gives it away. I mean, if it was like this was happening, let's say in the Hillary, if this was happening in other investigations, then one can say. But it was always in one direction and against President Obama. President Clinton. One quick note, Bill. The Cowboys last week, touching on football here for a minute. Cowboys last week did not have a usual opening day ratings on television. They were down the lowest ratings since 2009. And some people were drawing conclusions from that. We'll know more tonight because they're playing on prime time right there in New York again. But if this is a trend, the NFL has bigger problems than they realize, Bill, because Dallas has always been a great market for the NFL, Bill.
That's exactly right. I mean, look, Dallas used to be called America's team, and Coach Landry and all the others. I think the NFL does have problems. I think it has problems that all came together at one time and were handled badly. One was the injuries. I think that had an impact. I know that there are now movements around the country run by parent groups to not let their sons play football because of these recorded incidents. They never handled it well. They never did what common sense tells you to do, which is to put a weight limit on football players. There's a minimum weight. There should be a maximum weight as well. They didn't even address it that seriously until there was a big drumbeat. And then the kneeling, they should have simply come out with a statement saying you are on company time. You can protest outside the game anytime you wish. We will back you in your right. We will legally defend you if somebody tries to interfere. But when you're in that uniform, that time belongs to your club and to the people viewing at home, especially a football game. And they would have gotten great support. And I think that if they worked it out with the players, there are many things the NFL can do to assuage the players' concerns, the African-American players. For example, those stadiums are sometimes empty. They could offer a stadium for a day for meetings and performances on behalf of a cause. Many things they could do, but they should have. Defending the flag is basic to a game that has become really the national pastime. It used to be baseball, but today football is probably the national pastime.
No, it is. There's no question
about
it.
And they didn't do it. They were half-hearted about it. The owners became all confused. Then in came the liberal pollsters to take public opinion polls where they shaped the questions. And they've let it drag on too far. There should be very definite rules, but with the provision that if they wish to protest outside the game, that the league will help them do it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
No, you're right. They can protest all they want, but not when they're working. I mean, I think most people understand that rule.
Yes.
I certainly do.
Yes.
Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time, and it should be an exciting week with all the stuff about Kavanaugh. Hopefully it all works out well because he's a good man, and hopefully he'll survive this. He's a really good man, and I think these attacks on him are really under the belt, as they like to say. But enjoy yourself tonight, Bill, and we'll talk next Sunday.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Silvio.
Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We enjoy Urgent Agenda a great deal. I check it every morning. One of the first things I do, I check the agenda, Urgent Agenda, in the morning, and then I usually check it sometime in the afternoon as well. Great analysis from our friend Bill Katz. Well, have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you later.